One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Enviromedica, makers of Terra Flora. A novel broad-spectrum symbiotic formulated with a combination of spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Paleo Magazine, the well-being journal, the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
Do you want to go higher, baby? You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Navi Mendoza, and Von Eaglin will be in studio with us here today. So hope everybody's doing well. I feel good. I just finished exercising after being sick and off of my exercise program for almost 10 days.
Man, how'd it feel?
It felt great.
Yeah.
It felt great. And I'm still coughing at night. And, but
getting better.
But it felt, but the importance, you know, like so many, especially women, will spend money on clothes and shoes and makeup and hair and nails and all these things when they should really focus on their health.
Yeah. Do that inner work.
Like really focus on your health, the inner work of your body, your mind, your spirit, all three of them to be the most powerful woman that you can possibly be.
Yeah.
And I say woman, I'm speaking to men too, because your health, my God, it's your wealth. It really is.
It really is.
So many people take it for granted. I know I did. I'm thankful that I got sick because it was a reboot for me to understand that no, you can't burn the candle at both ends. No, you can't drink too much wine at night.
It's like every time my nose is stuffy for like a few days and then finally you can breathe again. Yeah. You're just so thankful that it's gone and it's passed.
No, you know, I've been so traumatized by a lot of things lately that I'm so thankful and have so much gratitude for the good that I do have in my life. So yesterday morning, this is a true story, and you can laugh. I don't care. I really don't care. What at the end of the day, yes, I care what people think of me, but really I don't, because, you know, I just don't. I'm pretty confident. Well, and yeah, and you shouldn't.
Really
but
shouldn't.
But so here's the other day. So yesterday morning, I got out of bed after not even being able to swallow without extreme pain. And Aviana's kind of got the same thing going on. We've been going through it together. I'm sure I got you sick.
Probably.
From coughing in the studio.
It's fine.
But you know, when it's game time, you got to show up. But so yesterday morning, the first thing I did when I was able to swallow without pain in my neck and my ears, I did the sign of the cross on my body, like a Catholic, even though I'm not Catholic anymore. I guess it's just ingrained in me. And just thank God in the universe that I was well enough to swallow without pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes that's enough, like just being so grateful that doing the normal things that you take for granted, swallowing.
Yeah, or exercising.
Or exercising, yeah. People need to get into that mental state to, like, keep being their best.
Yeah. And Tina's so good at what she does. She really is, because she has empathy and understanding. She not only trains women, she trains men. She trains very successful men because she's so good at what she does.
Yeah, training can be hard for some people, and having a great trainer is all the help.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got Drew Manning on the show today. He's going to be talking about the toughest part of losing weight. He is a New York Times bestselling author of the book Fit to Fat to Fit.
What do you think is the toughest part of losing weight? I feel like there's so many answers.
Well, you know, I feel like I've been fit to fat to fit in the last couple of years, because I did. I gained, I don't know, like 10 pounds, which doesn't sound like a lot, but I'm a little frame. I'm only like 5'3¾". I said 5'2" the other day, and I'm like, why'd I say 5'2"? I'm almost 5'4". I think I'm shrinking. But I don't know. I was thinking to myself, what is the toughest part of losing weight?
For me, it's keeping it off. Like,
yeah.
Staying yeah. at that
consistency.
Weight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And there's Vaughn. Vaughn Eaglin just jumped through the door like Batman.
For real.
But yeah, so, and Vaughn's going to be talking about how do you know whether to believe an apology?
I love this topic.
I do too. Because I'm sorry.
It's tricky.
It's just so easy to say. But the proof is in the pudding if you change whatever it is you're sorry for. And a lot of people never do that. They go their whole life and apologize over and over and over again. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And yet they never change anything. Right,
yeah,
Vaughn?
So I think apologies need to be accompanied with behavioral change.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, it's one thing to say I'm sorry, but it's another thing to actually like put that into practice. Because not just taking responsibility, because there are actually different languages of apology. The guy who wrote... Five Love Languages, Gary Chapman, mm-hmm. he actually came out with another iteration of that book called Five Languages of Apology.
Uh-huh.
So some people apologize differently and receive apologies differently, and we'll talk about that in the next segment.
Yeah, I can't wait. Are you getting sick too, or you got a cold?
Oh, no, I'm out of breath. I was running here. So, so I was like, I got to make sure I get here on time. So Yeah,
it happens.
I'm here though.
Yeah, and it's always good to have you in studio. It really is. So anything you want to get out there to the listeners today?
What's the toughest part of losing weight to you?
The toughest part of losing weight is consistency. I posted a picture earlier today.
You've been fat to fit to fat, too.
This is true. This is true.
You've been young, chubby.
Young, chubby, and
now fit.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, diet is always the biggest thing for me.
Yep.
Because
yeah,
for me, I have the discipline to actually get to the gym. Like, working out is not an issue for me. And my wife always says this, that if you were not as active as you are, you would probably be obese, because I like to eat a lot of times.
Yeah.
You guys know that I'm a chipaholic. And
eating
is always the biggest thing. And so whenever I'm tired, I always want carbs late at night. I want to eat late.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm stressed, different things like that, because eating, like, your relationship with food has to change, because a lot of times I'm an emotional eater. I'm sad, it's time to eat. I'm bored, it's time to eat. Oh, I'm happy, it's time to eat. It's time to celebrate, you know, and I always find an excuse to eat something. So
I feel like your relationship with food, it can go up and down. Like, it's not always the same.
I agree with you. And my relationship with food had to change as I got older. And so I realized I didn't have to finish everything on my plate. You know, it's okay to leave some.
No, I don't know about that. No wasting food. No,
you save that's it for later.
Exactly. I have a real pet food. Peeve with that. Don't
really?
Put anything on your plate. I
right.
just hate it when people do that. Like, I think it's so incredibly rude to the universe, to the chef, to whatever. If you put it on your plate, you damn well better eat it house. I'll just tell you that.
I totally understand that, but my eyes are bigger than my stomach, and I would put a lot of food on my plate. I mean, this is Texas. Yeah. We make everything bigger
in Texas.
I've got a couple
of...
I've got
a couple of regular food wasters at my house that I've been
food
so
wasters.
Close to saying something.
Food wasters.
Yeah, that's what I call them, food wasters.
So, well, you probably had to talk with them, Bernadette. So,
hey, you know what? I've gone hungry before.
Really?
Like, seriously.
Yeah.
So, in my younger days, when I was on my own, my parents had gone to Houston. I was living, you know, in my own apartment. I barely could pay my rent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working 2-3 jobs, I used to eat the leftover sandwiches and stuff off other people's plates or the popcorn on the tables.
Wow.
So, you know,
So you have an appreciation for it.
I do. And I'm not getting out my violin here. Poor, poor me. But I think that it's good. That was something that taught me to survive.
Yeah. My grandmother, of course, a lot of people, they grew up in the Great Depression, and they're kind of country folks, so they always had this rule, you finish what's on your plate. My dad is the same way. He doesn't waste food at all.
Good for him.
And I'm in a position now where I'm like, okay, I don't have to eat every single thing. I actually can save it for later, and I don't have to clear this plate right here and there, because a lot of times I'll still keep eating, although my body has sent signals to my brain that you're full, and I'll eat it. Out of, I don't know, sometimes out of pride or, you know, whatever it is, I'll keep eating. But again, my relationship with food had to change.
Yeah.
So that's really the main thing, is that whatever your relationship with food is, you need to really understand what your relationship with food is and diagnose how it is you're eating, when you're eating. And whenever you do meal preps, a lot of times that's the easiest way I can do, I can lose weight, because I've planned out my calories or my caloric intake. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't allow any food wasting in my house. I really don't. Anybody that,
dogs,
even my
cats,
nieces and nephews.
Everybody has to
keep it. When my nieces and nephews were young and they would come over, I mean, or we would go out to dinner or something, they would get the evil eye if they even thought about it.
If you're full, too bad. Keep
too bad.
Eating.
Yeah, you put it on your plate. You got to eat it.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
It teaches discipline.
We don't do takeout.
And respect.
No, nothing well, like if you're a doggy bag.
Well, you know what? You know what? Here's interesting that you should say that because one of the reasons Americans are so fat is because the portions are too big.
I was just about to say that.
It's ridiculous.
I agree with that. Okay.
You go to any restaurant and it's like three times a normal serving.
This is true.
It's junk food.
Papacitos and Papados the other day, and the plate came out, and it was as big, and I'm a pretty big guy, but the thing was as long as my forearm. I would say like a foot and a half close to in terms of like just food just piled on the plate, and they gave you appetizers beforehand. I was like, what is going on here? You know, just too big.
Too much food.
And people are like, this is amazing. Yeah. This is the best meal I've ever had.
Well, that's the thing with America, overconsumption, because we love to waste in this country. They don't do it in other countries.
I agree with you.
Not like they do here.
And then how many times do people take their leftovers home and actually eat them? Like, it's never as good at home.
Or forget them. A lot of times they don't even make it out of the restaurant because they get left on the table.
Yeah. That's
many,
true.
Many times.
We do waste a lot of food. I'm that kind of guy that does eat leftovers, I will be honest with you. So
good for you.
My wife knows this, that anything she leaves in the refrigerator is fair game. And so she'll come back and want something and it's already gone.
It's gone.
I've consumed it.
Well, you know, and here's just a tip. If my perspective, like for lunches for my kids, I've always taken them very serious because food is medicine. And so I will, whatever I prepare for dinner, always have, and then I'll make a lunch for myself or a dinner for like tonight's Thursday night, so I don't have my daughter, but I prepared her lunch. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. So with the food that I have, like the other night we had rice and peas and broccoli and some veggie chicken nuggets, and I'm trying to think what else. And so then I prepared a meal for her to take to school.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we'll take it out like in the morning so it'll get more to room temperature so that she won't have to pop it for a long time into the microwave, if at all.
Yeah.
So there's lots of ways to
be more
save
efficient.
Food,
yeah. So
yeah, there's a lot of people in the world that don't have food, so we need to be respectful.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, so we've got a great show coming up. We've got Drew Manning, the toughest part of losing weight. He is incredible. We're going to be talking about his new book, too, Complete Keto. It's now available. And I met someone today that I'm going to suggest the ketogenic diet to, that I think that really needs it. I'm going to overstep a boundary.
Okay.
But we've got a great show coming up with Von Eaglin and the team. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. Diamond Gray, everyone, welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Aviana Barrientos, Navi Mendoza, Von Eaglin, and one of my favorite guys, Drew Manning. He is the New York Times bestselling author of the book Fit to Fat to Fit, and he is best known for his fittofattofit.com experiment that went viral online. He has been featured on shows like Dr. Oz, Good Morning America, The View, and many more. His experiment has become a hit TV show as well called Fit to Fat to Fit, airing on A&E and Lifetime. His new book, Complete Keto, is available now, and his website is Fit to Fat to Fit, and that's with the number two, so FIT2FAT2FIT.com. Always a pleasure. How are you doing today, Drew?
Bernadette, it's always good to be back. Thank you so much for having me back on.
I always love your content. I do. And you just bring such a positive light to the show. I just enjoy it. And I actually saw you on Instagram TV this morning talking about your franchising program that is deeply based in apathy. I love it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's my mission right now, is trying to bring empathy to the fitness industry. No one else is really talking about it. It's a new approach. So, you know, I think it's going to make a change in the fitness industry. We all need more empathy in this world, but especially in this industry where there's so much judgment and misunderstanding that goes on.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. So kudos to you. I love it. I love the ingenuity of the thinking. And you're in the franchising business. So welcome.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I have a little bit of franchising background, and so I love that it's not a startup, if you will, or an investment that requires a lot of money, like most franchises do.
Yeah, it's something that's never been done before in the fitness industry or the franchising industry, where it's low barrier to entry, where it's a low cost. You don't have to own a gym. There's no brick and mortar here that you're buying. It's not like a McDonald's or Subway.
Right.
It acts kind of like a certification model, in the sense where you come out to Utah for the 3-day seminar, you pay for that, and you get certified. And then from there, you are a Fit trainer in your city or state, wherever mm-hmm. you live. And then we market you in that area as the Fit trainer that understands the mental and emotional struggles, that understands the difference between empathy and sympathy when it comes to transformation. I think that's what people are looking for, is someone that truly cares.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is something I'm trying to get across to these trainers on the front lines, is no one cares how much you guys know. You could have all the certifications in the world until they know how much you care first.
Yeah,
so
I could.
Empathy first is their motto.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And because the toughest part of losing weight, which we're going to talk about, that's our topic today, is part of that is not judging yourself harshly. And you need to surround yourself with people that don't do that either, right?
Amen. Yep.
Well, you know,
exactly right.
So for people that haven't maybe heard of Fit to Fat to Fit, can you give a little recap on your weight loss journey with our listeners, as I said, who might not be familiar with your story?
Yeah, so back in 2011, I came up with this crazy idea as a trainer myself, someone who struggled with connecting with my clients, because I figured it was so easy in my head. Like, why don't you guys just eat less and work out? And I was more of the judgmental trainer. And I had this idea to gain weight on purpose. And I know it sounds crazy and ridiculous, but I stopped exercising for 6 months. I put on 75 pounds of pure fat. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. It was the most humbling thing I've ever done. And it just taught me how wrong my approach was. Even with my certifications that I had and all the knowledge that I had to you know, help people lose weight, I just realized how wrong I was in my approach to helping people. And that's where this whole idea of bringing empathy to the fitness industry started, was this humbling process of putting on this weight, even though it wasn't a complete understanding. It was a small understanding of how hard it was, especially on the mental and emotional side. Especially, mm-hmm. to make a long story short, I lost the weight,
yep.
but it was harder than anything I've ever done. Wrote the book, and then, you know, here we are today, and I'm talking about this.
But, you know, that process took you to this great level of understanding and deep empathy, like you're talking about with this franchising program that you're kicking off, because I don't think you can really have success unless you truly understand your customer or your client, right?
Exactly, and this is something new that no one has ever really done before, on purpose at least, right?
Right.
And so it was kind of crazy, but sometimes it takes something crazy to catch people's attention, to then motivate them and inspire them to make a lifestyle change. And that was the whole reason I did it. You know, I wasn't doing this to show people, oh, look, it's easy, you can do it too, or rubbing it in their faces to show them how easy it is to lose weight. It mm-hmm. was the hardest thing I've ever done. And I came out of it with a totally new perspective. And I think, this is what people tell me. It made me so much more relatable.
Well, yeah.
It brought me down to their level.
Well, you got an incredible education because you did it firsthand. So you have, like I said, a very deep, empathetic understanding of what you're dealing with. So the toughest part of losing weight, what was it for you?
Man, that was, so here's the thing. I ate, you know, these unhealthy processed foods for only six months. So things like Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Mountain Dew and SpaghettiOs and Hot Pockets and all the delicious stuff that we have here in America that is cheap, it's convenient, and I'll be honest, you know, it tasted really good. Like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I could eat that every day, all day. So the hardest part for me was overcoming the emotional connection to food. And let me be totally honest with you, I'm not going to go as far to say I was addicted to food, but there are people that truly are.
Yeah.
I ate this way for 6 months, and for me, it was super hard to go from eating that food to then eating real food like broccoli and spinach and chicken and like all this food that we know we're supposed to eat. The emotional connection, my body went through these crazy withdrawal symptoms as if I was addicted to a drug. And so that really opened up my eyes to just how many people struggle out there with the emotional connection to food, because we tend to eat our emotions. When we're sad, we eat chocolate or ice cream. When we're happy, we celebrate with cake and ice cream. When we're mad or angry, it's so easy just to go for the convenient food that
Well, food is like a drug. I mean, you get a dopamine release just like you when you, you know, when you do any kind of drug. I'm looking over at Von Eaglin because he's a therapist, a licensed professional counselor. And, you know, you do get a dopamine. I mean, the addiction of any drug, whether it be alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, or a big bowl of ice cream, it's all the same, isn't it?
It is. It really, really is. Because you see the same neurosynapses that become active inside of the brain whenever you actually eat something sugar. You know, a lot of times people equate like eating sugar to actually taking cocaine.
Yeah.
And so the brain lights up just like whenever you take a line of cocaine.
Well, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, isn't there some sort of famous mouse study where the mouse went for the sugar instead of the cocaine?
Yeah. So, I mean, that stuff is real, you know, and you can get addicted to sugar. And whenever you are cycling off of it, you will experience withdrawals from sugar.
Yeah.
You know, like, why do I have a headache? Because of the sugar intake or the caffeine or whatever you're addicted to or whatever food that is, again, you can get addicted to it.
Yeah. Well, Drew, you know, where did you find your inner drive to keep pushing and keep going? So many people don't know where to tap into or what to tap into. What really helped you to find that inner drive?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about this because I've helped a lot of people with that transition of losing the weight and transforming. And unfortunately, it's not an easy journey. I know that in theory, it's simple, right? Eat less, work out, and you'll lose weight, right? The simplicity of it makes sense. The application of it is what's hard for people. For me, the accountability to my audience is what kept me pushing through those hard times where I was walking in the grocery store, seeing Cinnamon Toast Crunch, calling my name, wanting me to eat it. I wanted to for sure, but knowing that there were people out there that were following me on this journey, that were doing this journey with me,
right,
helped me push through those hard times. So anyone listening that is struggling with staying consistent with a healthy diet, there's two things that I think are key here. And one is accountability. So you have to find an audience or a group of people to stay accountable to. So whether that's an online community on Facebook or Weight Watchers or your family, your friends, whatever it is, you have to find someone to stay accountable to. Because if you just think you're just going to willpower your way through it, I promise you there's so many people, majority of people, willpower does not work for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens when we try to willpower our way through it, we sometimes fail, and then we end up thinking we are a failure. And so you have to find someone to stay accountable to that gives you a support of, you know, or a balance of a kick in the butt every once in a while, right? We need that tough love.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need someone reminding us that we're worth it to keep fighting, that
yeah.
we're worth it to keep fighting for our health. And so that's what accountability and a support system will do. So if you're listening out there and you are struggling, you have to find someone to stay accountable to, and you need a support system. And if you have the money, invest in a coach. Like, these accountability coaches is a real thing. Everyone, you know, should have some type of a mentor or accountability coach.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for not just health and fitness. It's also for finances and spiritual health and any kind of goal that you want to achieve. If you can invest in yourself and invest in a coach to stay accountable to, you are 5 to 7 times more likely to succeed in that goal versus.
Yeah, and if you can't, you know, join a gym, do something, do whatever it takes, because, you know, I talked about this at the opening of the show. There's nothing more valuable than your health, like nothing. I was saying that so many women spend money on, you know, hair, clothes, makeup, shoes, you know, all these things that are aesthetically pleasing and yes, can make you look more attractive, but the attractiveness comes truly from being healthy deep inside, body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah, we end up sacrificing our health to gain wealth, and then at the end of our life, we use that wealth to try and get our health back.
Right,
and it's so backwards because you take it for granted because you're like, oh, you know, I'm fine, I'm not dying, like I'm okay. So you take that health for granted, and so if you could shift your perception and realize that health is the real wealth, then you'll be, you know, so much, you'll be preventing all these things from mm-hmm. happening instead of one day when you know you're stuck with or
yeah.
all of a sudden you get type 2 diabetes or something, you know, sad like that,
yeah.
Or big like that, then it's too late.
Well, you got to be passionate about what you're doing. And I'm going to pull something out of your book that I read that I think it's really important because I believe this too. So I never weigh myself. I go by what I look like in the mirror every day. When I look at myself naked, frontwards, backwards, sideways, and if I like what I see, or some days I'm a little, you know, maybe not so happy, but you know, I never beat myself up. But the thing that I love in your book that you write about, you said, here's what I learned the hard way. The final 10 to 15 pounds compromise a mental battle as much as a physical one. And in order to overcome mental and physical rigors, we must forget about the numbers. I say that in business as well, because the passion and the purpose of whatever it is you're doing behind it is more important than the numbers on the scale or the money in your bank account, if you will.
Yeah, you are not defined by the number on the scale. The problem is our society places so much value on something you step on that measures your relationship with gravity. That's literally all it does, and it changes throughout the day. So it's not constant. So I'm a huge believer in breaking up with the scale. If you want to, you know, do some type of measurement, go get your body composition tested, like a DEXA scan or a bod pod, something like that. So, because the goal really isn't weight loss. The goal is fat loss, right? We want to maintain our lean muscle mass, and the goal is fat loss. The scale can't tell you that. Plus, the scale can't tell you if you're becoming healthier, if you're becoming a better person, if you're happier. So don't give it that power. It's just a little device you step on that measures your relationship with gravity in that moment, and that's all it is. So time that we need to change our perception of the scale and, you know, not give it that power.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, what do you teach your clients about resilience? And what do you say to people who are ready to give up?
Good question. If I were to say something to someone out there that wants to give up, I would tell them that they're worth it to keep fighting, that they're worth it to be a healthy, happy human being. And, you know, the problem is that they need to believe that. So this is there's two things when it comes to transformation. There's the physical aspect of transformation, which is, you know, eating good food, exercising, moving our bodies, mindfulness. But then there's also a mental emotional component, and that has to do with self-worth, overcoming emotional traumas or challenges from our past, because a lot of times people struggle with physical transformation because of emotional traumas and challenges that they haven't yet overcome. Mm. And just like people gravitate towards drugs or alcohol or pornography or these other addictions that are out there, and it's the same with food, it's because of, you know, we tend to deal with our emotions with these distractions, right? Food distracts us. It makes us feel comfortable. So does alcohol, so does drugs, so does, you know, pornography, things like that that distract us from the real issues at hand. And so until we learn how to overcome those mental and emotional challenges, we're going to be stuck in this diet mentality of what's the next diet, what's the next exercise, what's the next supplement that I can take to lose weight so that I can feel better about myself, so that people will like me, when in reality, that's a lie, that's a myth that we're trying to buy into. Just like people trying to, you know, gain a lot of wealth and get rich because they think, oh, all my problems will be solved by this. It's the same with physical transformation. And so there's two approaches to physical transformation and mental and emotional transformation, and they have to happen at the same time. Instead of you just aim for physical transformation and focus on that and ignore the emotional traumas and challenges that you haven't yet overcome, I promise you it's not going to be as fulfilling. Even if you get a six-pack, even if you get skinny, you'll realize that you're not as fulfilled with that transformation it'll be short-lived because you haven't yet, you know, had a complete transformation. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try and tell people is mental, emotional, spiritual at the same time. And that's kind of my unique approach to helping people is, you know, it's not just about macros and calories and supplements and weight loss. That's one small piece of the puzzle. Let's focus on these other things that you've been dealing with probably since childhood that you haven't let go of yet.
Yep.
So that's kind of my unique approach.
Well, I love it. I do. And it's always great to have you on the show. If you're just now joining us, this is Drew Manning on the line with us. He is the author of Fit to Fat to Fit. Reinventing the way to weight loss. And you've got a keto book coming out, Complete Keto. Is it available on Amazon yet?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, it's out there. And it has all the stuff in it, too, the mental and emotional piece as well.
Oh, I love it. All right, Drew, thanks so much. Have a great day. Thanks for jumping on with us.
Thanks, Bernadette. Have a good one.
You too. All right, everyone. Stay tuned. We've got Von England coming up. How do you know whether to believe an apology? You're not going to want to miss it. You're listening to One Life Radio. I'm sorry. Oh my gosh. Everyone, welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Navi Mendoza, and Von Eaglin. We're going to be talking about how do you know whether to believe an apology when someone says they're sorry, but they continue to do the same thing over and over again. Von Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couple relationships, dialogue, and you can find him at PrestonPlaceCounseling.com. That's PrestonPlaceCounseling.com, or follow him on Instagram at Von Talks. Okay, so how do you know whether to believe an apology? And how can you be certain that the person apologizing really means what they say?
Well, there's a lot of this is a debate because, you know, I've seen certain studies that say, you know what, you really can't tell when someone's lying, because someone, a good liar, really knows how to work an audience, because they'll look at you and then intuitively say, okay, this is what this person needs to hear in order for me to be believable. In fact, I've had some clients, narcissistic clients, some clients who have like sociopathic tendencies, and they're really, really good at lying. So when we're talking about apologies, really for the normal person, so I'm not saying someone with a mood disorder or a personality disorder or anything, but you want to have the nonverbal behaviors as well as what they're saying really match up. And so there's this thing called embodied apologies, if that makes sense, or embodied remorse. So do you really embody the remorse that you're saying? Because like, let's say if somebody's giving a public apology, can I really believe what they're saying if that apology is actually scripted?
Yeah, right, so. I think about that a lot when you see like public figures or celebrities, mm-hmm. when they get under the spotlight for doing something that maybe they shouldn't have.
Who
and they
recently
come out,
said they're sorry for something?
It was Gina Rodriguez.
Okay.
She was singing a Fuji song and mm-hmm. was singing and said the N-word.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was the lyrics to the song, and she was just getting her hair done, and so she got a lot of backlash for that. And so she came out later that day and apologized for it, and people were still giving her a lot of crap because she did not seem very sincere with her mm-hmm. apology.
I was thinking about the woman that beat up her dog.
That girl who was hitting her dog and posted it on YouTube.
She
forgot to edit the parts out of her like hitting her dog, and then she apologized.
I want to hit her.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Yeah,
but it's like you can tell that they're not genuine apologies.
Right. Almost. So they just happen to get caught, and then what happens is that now I need to, you know, make amends with the public because I put this out there, something that was inappropriate. Just like whether it's Michael Vick beating dogs, or whether it's Felicity Huffman or Lori Loughlin like forgetting their kids in the school. You know, like there's a lot of different times whenever somebody has something that goes public, and then because of the backlash, then I need to issue an apology. But a lot of times they do not embody actual remorse.
Well, you know, speaking of Michael Vick, you know, I was part of the team that brought him to his knees.
Really?
I've told you this before. I'm working with PETA.
I don't know if I've heard this.
I was part of the team that really helped with that. But I do feel like Michael Vick has changed.
I agree. He is sorry,
and he realized that he was raised in such a way to have such disrespect for life. Mm-hmm. That he was put in that kind of environment, like just following the leader, so to speak. But I do think that he has truly changed.
I would say I agree with you, because I've seen some of the things that he's done after the fact. And because of the way he was raised, he really learned to objectify certain items, some of those being animals.
Right.
And so that was just his paradigm. And a lot of times whenever you apologize, or even when someone offends you, you'll be offended or not offended based on your own worldview.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example, and I don't know if we're going into politics, but let's say if I'm conservative and then Trump says, hey, you know, I grabbed a woman by the whatever, you know, if I really support the conservative movement, then what he said may not offend me as much.
Right.
However, me being African-American, just like when Amber Geiger was hugged by
the judge
and then the brother of mm-hmm. Botham Jean, whenever that happened, I look at it differently because I'm African-American. So based on my own worldview, I'm going to look at an offense or an apology very differently,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so some people actually offended that the judge gave her a hug. Like, why would you do something like that? Why are you handing her a Bible? And mm-hmm. actually, Amber Geiger is the one Amanda said, hey, I don't have my Bible, and the judge offered her Bible to Amber Geiger. But again, everybody is going to get offended by something, because we live in a world a lot of times where I'm looking to get offended by something.
So. Well, I mean, it's out of control out there. It is. Look at the recent murder. I actually went the story. What is it down, you know, where the... The police officer killed the woman in her home?
Atiana Jefferson.
Oh, yeah, in Fort Worth.
She was playing. I actually got a call about this
yesterday. I can't even believe that happened.
Right. I don't know if you saw the video, but yeah. He said, you know, whenever he didn't even give her 2 seconds.
No.
He said, raise your hands, and then he just pretty much just shot through
shot
the window.
Shot her dead.
While she's playing video games with her 8-year-old.
It's unbelievable.
Cousin. So,
yeah,
it was crazy. And I got a call about that yesterday, because that 8-year-old is going to be traumatized.
Oh, for sure.
By seeing Atiana die, you know, right there in their home.
And it was murder.
Right, it was. By a
police officer who should never have been a police officer.
Aaron Dean is his name. Dean.
So. And the call was like a concern call, right?
Right, yeah, right. Just a welfare check. Pretty much a welfare check. Like, hey, you know, the door is open. I just want to make sure
the screen door was
you're
closed.
That big of a puss, you've got no business being on any kind of police force.
So,
you know, right?
I've talked to some guys who, some guys who have been ostracized or I want to say this whole beta male thing. But sometimes when a guy doesn't have a lot of power growing up and he gets into a position where he does have power, they will abuse it and they'll try to take advantage of it because they've been powerless or, you know, I got picked on by the bully. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that's not for everybody. Some people are very honest and true and they're great police officers. I have friends who are police officers. But some people, whenever they get in a position of power, they will abuse it a lot of times because power will just bring out the characteristics that you already have within you. Same thing with money. If you have money and you've never had money, then all of a sudden you get money. If you've always wanted to do something, then those characteristics are not going to come to the surface, whether they're good or bad.
It's like people who win the lottery and then they spend it all.
You got it. You know, and so, you know, I got a degree in finance. So like money,
I didn't know that. Look at you.
So money is amoral. And so it has no moral. So it takes on the characteristics of whoever holds it in their hand. So if you have a lot of money and you can be a miser and you can be stingy, or you can be loving and benevolent and giving and generous. Mm-hmm. Same thing if you're poor. I can give you my last meal, or I can say, no, I would never give you something. So again, it's amoral. It doesn't have any morals. Mm-hmm. It's like a brick. I can take a brick and throw it through a window or a car, or I can take that same brick and build a hospital or a home. The brick doesn't care.
Yeah.
So again, a lot of times it takes on the characteristics of whatever. But
someone if they're already greedy and they make a lot of money, they're going to become more greedy. And the same is so true. If they're very generous, if they make a bunch of money, they just become more generous.
That's exactly the point that I'm making. Like again, whatever characteristics and the things that you have inside of you, your integrity, like the things that really make you tick. Money will just bring those things to the surface. Mm-hmm. Just like an athlete, if I've always wanted to have an orgy and I just didn't have access to it, now I can go out and do that. It's true, you know. So I'm being honest with you. You know, I now have access. Money gave me access to do something that I always wanted to do in the first place. So didn't
you
mean
or somebody else?
No, well, the other person who got the money. So, okay. Yeah, so.
Just clarifying there. Yeah, I wanted to be sure.
Well, yeah. So, man,
oh, my gosh.
I've had my share of fun burning.
Yeah, I know you have. That's why I asked. You know, I'm like, well.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to go to break because I love talking about this.
Okay.
More coming up with Von Eagland. How do you know whether to believe an apology? Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. A healthy gut is imperative for overall well-being, but maintaining a healthy microbiome in today's society isn't easy. We're all overstressed and overtired. Our bodies crave the good bacteria that is so lacking in our overprocessed foods and sterilized environments. We've already heard about the benefits of probiotics, but what if we take it a step further? Enviromedica has done just that with Terra Flora. Terra Flora is a true symbiotic, combining soil-based probiotics and food-based prebiotics. Think of it as probiotics with backup. This combination supports the survival of beneficial microorganisms our bodies crave. If you're overstressed, overtired, and just overall sluggish, listen to your gut. Try Terra Flora Broad Spectrum Symbiotic by Enviromedica. Visit them at Enviromedica.com. That's Enviromedica.com.
It's too late to apologize.
Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. I want to let you know that you can go to our website, oneliferadio.com, to download and listen to our podcast and subscribe to our newsletter. And you can also listen to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Or you can go right to iHeartMedia.com to listen live or download the free iHeartRadio app and listen to us from anywhere in the world. A big shout out to our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior. In fact, Von Eaglin is the one that turned me on to Sun Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
Like 5 years ago. You can get it at Vitamin Shop or put it in your smoothie at Smoothie King. Or you can get it pretty much almost at any retail. Or you can go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all of their products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. And Enviromedica, you know, is such an incredible product, you guys. Everybody that I've turned on to it is having so much success with it. It is one of the best probiotics on the market. I encourage you to go to Enviromedica.com and check it out. Their products really do deliver such a superior formulation and in the highest quality to help reconnect and align your body and your mind and everything that you need out there to be healthy. So check it out at Enviromedica.com. No evil foods, small batch, vegan plant-based meats. They make meat from nothing but plants. Check it out. I get mine at Whole Foods. I get the Italian Stallion, and I make my fiocchetti spaghetti.
Yeah.
Except it's all awesome. Plants.
It's always
so,
good.
Yeah, so check it out at Whole Foods. Okay, Vaughn, let's continue talking about this. How do you know whether to believe an apology?
Yeah, so a couple of things I want to mention. So in the opening, we talked about how there are different languages of apology. And so one person will express regret, and that is a form of apology. Like, that's their language of apology, or they want you to express regret. So a lot of times, just like love languages, you love people the way you want to be loved. And with apologies, the same thing. You apologize, or you want people to apologize the way you apologize. So one is expressing regret. The second one is actually accepting responsibility for what you did. So it's not enough just to say, you know what, I'm sorry for what I did, but you actually take responsibility. Another one is actually what they call making restitution. You need to do something. You need to make up to me for what you actually did, how you actually offended me. The fourth one would be actually expressing like a genuine repentance. And the fifth would be actually requesting forgiveness. So, you know, I apologize, but I never said, hey, can you forgive me? So people will apologize and receive apologies or express and receive apologies differently. So that is one thing. Dr. Gary Chapman came up with another iteration of that Love Languages book.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you this because as you were going through the steps of truly being sorry and regretful for something that you've done, is it, how do I want to say this? Are all those steps kind of like the grieving process in order to get through the grieving process and truly get to a point where there's no more deep sorrow, you have to go through all the steps. So is that the same with I'm sorry?
Well, I would say this is that every offense is going to be a little bit differently. Like, you know, someone who commits genocide, that's a whole different offense than someone who steps on my toe. You know
right,
what I mean? So
right.
the offense really matters. But I wouldn't say that they're necessarily steps as much as it is ways that you can actually apologize. Because, you know, again, you're going to receive apologies differently. And even the most cynical person, no matter who you are, they typically appreciate when someone actually does issue an apology. Now, they may not necessarily accept it or actually forgive you, but they will actually appreciate when you do issue some type of apology. So that's really important, is that you actually do apologize and take responsibility, you know, actually repent. Go ahead.
Yeah, but so how does that person go from, let's just say it's something where it's not step on your toe, you've clearly violated another person. You've hurt the other person, you know, whether it be body, mind, spirit, or just emotionally hurt them. How do you really change? How do you really?
So we're talking about the person who's actually trying to forgive the person apologizing?
No, the person, the violator.
The violator.
The person that hurt the other person.
Gotcha.
And they do it over and over again. Always say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. How do they get to a point, or can they actually change? Is there something that you know, flips a switch in their brain to make them realize that you can't just say you're sorry all the time?
Well, let's take it to kids, you know. So let's say my son steals a toy from another kid, and I say, hey, give that toy back, go tell him I'm sorry. My son did not actually express really regret and remorse. All I did was teach him how to be a good actor and do what's socially acceptable.
Right.
And so, you know, the person who's apologizing really has to take ownership and realize what they did. In other words, they have to learn empathy for the other person, how it is you offended that person, what is their worldview, and how it is they were offended. So, you know, whenever you express genuine remorse, like we said before, it needs to be accompanied by some type of behavioral change, because there are people who will actually apologize just to manipulate you,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so don't judge people for what they say. You have to judge them by actually what they do. And if I'm apologizing to you and it's not accompanied by some kind of behavioral change, like I'm actually going to change my behavior, then to me, that's not a real apology.
Yeah.
And so, or it's not actually taking responsibility for what you did.
Well, I have a ton more questions, but we are out of time, unfortunately. So we're going to have to pick this up where we left off the next time you're on. Von Eaglin, you can find him at PrestonPlaceCounseling.com or follow him on Instagram at Von Talks. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. We always enjoy doing the show. You know what? You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Do something with it.